Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to another edition of Global Leader Radio. Our topic today is the characteristics of effective leadership, and we introduce two leaders in the local community. So each of them has a solid track record of leadership success in both their careers and in their willingness to give back to the community, which helps to make us all better. So I'm counting this appearance as part of their community service, so they're getting even more credit as they've both taken time out of their busy schedules to visit with us and share their wisdom and insights with our learning community. So with that overview, we welcome Holly Bass and Mike Quinlan.
Hi.
Hey, thanks. And I will say that anytime I have to sit with you, it is like community service. So.
Very good. So Holly Bass is the CEO of Cobb Travel and Tourism. She's responsible for CT&T's operations, including strategic planning, finance, sales, and marketing. Cobb Travel and Tourism is responsible for promoting and generating tourism, convention, trade show, and sports development activities throughout Cobb County. So in 2006, Holly was named a Georgia Trend Magazine 40 Under 40. In 2007, she received the prestigious YWCA of Northwest Georgia's Women of Achievement Award. And in 2008, she was given the Up and Comers Award by the Atlanta Business Chronicle. Most recently, she was named one of the 20 Under 40 in Cobb Life Magazine. Interestingly enough, she's a volunteer probation officer for the Cobb County Superior Court for 13 years. So she's a 2000 graduate of Leadership Cobb, a 2003 graduate of Honorary Commanders, and a 2011 graduate of the Regional Leadership Institute. I don't know how Mike's going to top that. She's also a native of Cobb County, Georgia, and she's a graduate of the University of Georgia. And most importantly, she's in the studio with us today. So welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, with deference to Mike, hopefully you'll be okay with us starting with Holly.
Yeah, well, actually, you're going to hear the door slam because I'm going to walk out after that intro. That was pretty impressive.
She's stellar. She's stellar.
I'm serious. Stellar.
So first, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Well, good. And I see that you voted today, so so the weather did not stop you at all.
It did not. I was very proud to do my civic duty and was standing in line before 7 this morning, so it was great.
Good stuff. So 2 years ago, you took over an organization that had limited relevancy on a countrywide basis. So how did you start to build a relevant economic development organization?
At the time, it was a very interesting period for the organization, and I really started with looking at the team, and I was able and very fortunate to be able to bring in the right people. Mm-hmm. Was able to make some changes within that team. We only have 9 on our staff, so it's really important that everybody's there and everybody's got their A game, and we're all doing exactly what we need to do. Then beyond that, we actually did a research study, and it was the first time any research had been done around travel and tourism in our community in about 20 years. And since nothing has changed in our world in 20 years, we decided it was about time to take a look at that. And it was very eye-opening. It was a great opportunity for us to really get the community around us because we had a very specific, very deliberate process. And it was led by Market Street Services, which is an economic development leader firm out of Atlanta, and brought everybody together. It was about 25 stakeholders. I didn't lead the conversation. Somebody else led it so that it was truly a open and free and honest conversation. And from that, we developed a strategic plan and an implementation plan, and we have just taken that, and we're rocking now.
So you are very happy with the outcome, and you've been able to action on everything that's pretty much come down the pike, or is it a phased approach?
It's definitely a phased approach. And one of the things that I really like about it is that it is very flexible. Okay. I mean, we have our overall goals, and we are working very hard and very diligently toward those. But things don't always go exactly as you plan. And so, you know, you have to come back, punt, make adjustments, do those kind of things.
Absolutely.
But it is, it's something that's getting us to where we need to go. And that's what's really exciting about it.
So, Holly, if you've spent that type of time working on this research study and looking at these applied analytics, that must be something really important about tourism. So tell us a little bit about what tourism means to Cobb County.
Well, actually, what we learned from this study, which is incredibly important, especially to me in my world, is that travel and tourism is the number one economic driver in Cobb County at $2.02 billion. So it's larger than Lockheed. It's larger than the school system. It is larger than Home Depot. It truly drives so many things within our community. We have, as a market industry segment, we employ almost 30,000 people, 29,995 to be exact. So,
but who's counting, right?
Not me. It's almost 30,000, and that's what really counts. But, you know, so there are, is a lot of investment within our community that really centers around travel and tourism and the attractions and the restaurants, the hotels, everything that makes up that market industry segment.
So that impact, that $2.02 billion, if I heard that correctly, that is a serious overall commercial perspective on the impact of the tourism industry. So what else does it cover? Is it more than just hotels and hospitality and amusement parks?
Well, no, actually, those are really kind of our key areas. And, you know, I'll tell you that Cobb County is really blessed to have a lot of great assets in our community. I mean, I can talk to you about kind of the attractions and kind of what we have there because there's some really significant things for our community and that makes us a leader, not just locally, but actually nationally. And then, you know, it's all of the restaurants and the hotels and, you know, the employees. And we say a lot of times that actually travel and tourism is the front door to economic development because companies want to move their businesses and their employees and their employees' families to a place that's alive and thriving with a lot of different opportunities in the areas of arts, culture, entertainment, everything. And so that's what our area really offers within Cobb.
So some of the country, the county's unique assets above and beyond what you mentioned, you know, where does Kennesaw Mountain rank in that?
Well, actually, that's one of the most exciting things. Kennesaw Mountain is the most on a national level, is the most visited Civil War battle site in the entire country.
Really?
They have more people than Gettysburg.
Wow. Now, that is impressive. Did you know that, Mike?
I did not. No. It's right in our own backyard.
Right in our own backyard. So, so I read in your bio that you're pretty active in the community. Can you tell us a little bit about how you're making a difference there, and then some of, what are some of the elements of leadership you've used in your community service?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I like pushing myself. I like doing new and different things. I am this year I'm chairing the Gobble Jog for Mess Ministries, which is a very important organization within Cobb.
So Gobble has something to do with turkeys.
It does. It's actually, it is a 1K, 5K, 10K that's run on Thanksgiving morning. So I'm doing my first 5K.
My goodness.
Very excited about that.
She's going to lead from the front.
I am going to shoot the starting gun and lead from the front. But then, you know, I try to do a lot of different things. I think from a community service perspective, the one that I'm most proud of was the volunteer probation officer role that I did for about 13 years with Cobb Superior Court because it was very unique, lots of opportunity to display some leadership. You know, I had no problem telling people that they didn't do what they were supposed to. I could, you know, basically order a warrant for their arrest and it would be just fine. They could go back to jail and I wouldn't, you know. It is what it is, but it's a lot of opportunity to bring people back to back to center, and you know, and a lot of times they've lost their focus, and so it's an opportunity to see them almost every week and help them with areas.
So if that's part of leadership, you certainly displayed that just now because Sir Mike Quinlan certainly was trying to take you off center, and we thank you for being very focused. So what other leadership aspects have you seen and used in your community service?
You know, it has been leadership as a whole. I mean, you know, I've been very fortunate to lead, you know, kind of be the chair of different organizations. I'm chairing the Smith Gilbert Gardens Foundation right now. And really trying to get them on track when you're going through the governance and through the articles of incorporation and really trying to, you know, to make sure that you're doing exactly what you're supposed to do.
So you got to be very detail-oriented there, of course.
You do. You also have to be very much a consensus builder.
Okay.
And, you know, whenever you have boards, including the ones that you serve on or the ones that you run with your organization. I mean, I answer to a board of directors. You know, it's really important to be able to build consensus, have conversations, and, you know, really just try to manage just all of the opportunities that are ahead of you.
Yeah, good stuff, because our program is really focused on discussing ideas that matter with people who care. And, of course, you represent someone who's very passionate about what she does, and both in your energy, you know, although we just met, I can tell the energy is very high, and also in your leadership and the things that you've done in the past. So so you talked a little bit about your team earlier. So how are you and your team setting yourselves apart and really leading the charge for tourism in Cobb County?
You know, one of the things I love about my team is that everybody is completely open. And you can bring any idea to us, and we will do our very best to make it work. It doesn't always happen that way, or it may be that, you know, things need to be changed a little bit here or there. But everybody wants to have those conversations. And so, you know, just being open to those opportunities is really significant for us. And I think that that's one of the changes that has really happened over the past couple of years, is that we're not a no organization. We're a yes, or let's figure it out.
Oh, that's important. So, you know, you have an opportunity now to give your team a shout out and certainly let everybody in our listening community know that the 2 million we talked about earlier, Mike,
let
everybody across the world know exactly who your important and fantastic team is composed of.
Oh, well, I would love to tell you all about them. Lindsay Burris leads our marketing team, and Jackie Turner works for her. Does a fantastic job with our social media. So travelcobb.org, you know, you can like us on Facebook, Twitter, the whole bit. We're there. Then also Christina McCurdy does all of our finance, and she is a wonderful back-of-the-house person. We have three sales team: Rhea Lowry, who focuses on sports, and Melissa Legault, who does everything 500 room nights and below, and then Chris Colbert, who does everything 500 room nights and above.
Okay.
Megan Stambaugh, who is with our partner services division, so she reaches out to all of the different organizations in the community, and then Kathy Buskey, who supports her. So 9 great people at Cobb Travel and Tourism, and I am blessed every day to work with them.
Well, that sounds fantastic. So as the leader of that organization, of course, you know, you're really focused on making decisions and making things happen. You mentioned that earlier today. So what are the most important decisions you make as a leader of your organization?
You know, I think that obviously the overall strategic decisions, the big things, like, again, working with the board and working with all of those different groups is really important. But I think the most critical ones are on your day-to-day basis, the really small ones, being fair, being consistent, and making sure that your team knows that you back them up. Because if you have those in place, then whenever it comes down to the line, they're going to go with you. And that's what you need. You need that loyalty. You need that respect. And if you back them up on a daily basis, and they think that you're fair, they think that you're honest, and they truly believe that, then all of that translates into those really big decisions, and everybody's there and moving forward.
Ah, very good. So, Holly, how do you actually continue to foster cohesion between your team? Because I know that those things you're talking about really is empowerment and making sure that, that you're consistent with little things. But overall, is that enough to be able to have a really cohesive team to make sure that when the big issues come about, that you're all staying together and moving forward?
You know, I think it's a great basis. I mean, I think it's really important as you go along to have planned, you know, opportunities for everybody to have input and to be a part. I also think it's great to have those unplanned, very spontaneous moments. For example, the other day I walked in from a meeting and Chris actually asked, he said, "Did you bring me cookies?" Because it's famous in hospitality world that cookies will show up on your doorstep like at any point in time. No, there's just no question about it. And I was like, you know, no cookies. I'm like, but I was like, come on, let's go to Euphoria. So like I took the entire team. It was a Wednesday afternoon, 2 o'clock. I'm like, let's just go to Euphoria. And I have the opportunity to do that because there's only 9 people there. But, you know, it's those kind of things, and it's asking for opinions and making people that have that investment. And so, you know, it takes a lot of effort and time, and you actually have to think about it and plan it. But when it can happen spontaneously, that's so just kind of icing on the cake.
Gotcha. So it does have to be a kind of a blend between intentionality and spontaneity, right?
Yeah, it does.
So very good. So as we pivot from Holly toward retired U.S. Navy Commander Mike Quinlan, who's a principal at Hensler Financial, I'm having to sit up just a little taller as I address Mike as we move forward here. He's a financial consulting and money management guru, and he works with the Hensler Financial Group, and they have assets under advisement of more than $1.3 billion as of September the 30th, 2012. And so Mr. Quinlan is responsible for the ongoing business development and the business operations and implementation of the long-term strategies to ensure the growth of client relationships and development of employees. And he's good at what he does. I can attest to that personally and when it comes to business development. So Mike was recently honored as a 2012 recipient of the Kennesaw State University Alumni Association's Distinguished Alumni Award for his professional achievements, civic affiliations, community activities, and continuous support of the initiatives in the Coles College of Business. So welcome, Mike. How are you?
Well, thank you very much. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Yeah, and you're looking great too, sir. So,
well, you know, that's what it's all about, right?
That's what it's all about. So congratulations on being recognized as a distinguished alumni for 2012. I apologize for not being able to be there, but you know I had another engagement.
That's right. And, well, and you told
you
me that, so
me.
I gave you a pass that time. That's right.
So can you talk a little bit about what that great honor means for you?
Well, yeah, you know, obviously any time that you are honored by an institution that you spent a significant amount of time with and that kind of enriched your life early on, then it's a great honor. And the ability for us, you know, being right around the corner from Kennesaw State and to be involved with the student body and with the instructors there is always a blessing for us. We love to give back to the school that we all spent so much time at, but also it's good for us because we get a chance to bring some of the students into our environment. We get to kind of teach them some things, to show them what it might be like as they potentially choose this line of business as their mm-hmm. career. So so it's a great relationship.
Well, I'd love you to talk a little bit more about that because I know that Gene Hensler certainly has donated quite a bit of funds to the Hensler and created a Hensler Trading Room, right?
Sure. They sure have. The Hensler Trading Room is a place where young students, well, students at Kennesaw, they're not all necessarily so young. I wasn't when I went through there. But they have an opportunity to trade real money. So they're going through, they're doing research on securities. They are getting a little skin in the game in terms of having a real account that they have to deal with. And, again, it's an opportunity for us to kind of put them in the environment that they would potentially be in after they get out of college. The instructors over there are doing a great job with them. And so it's good. It's good for us. It's good for them.
Well, real money. Why not Monopoly money?
Well, you know, again, that potentially is a good thing for the school. It gives them puts a little sweat on the forehead every now
yeah,
and then when they have to make that investment. So that's good.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I tell you. So, Mike, from your bio, I know that during your distinguished career, you've held significant leadership positions with various squadrons and staff in the military.
Right.
And so you've seen your share of perhaps all types of leaders, both effective and ineffective.
Sure.
So, I want to get your take on. And perhaps what is Mike Quinlan's idea or concept of leadership?
Well, so I wrote down a couple of notes here as Holly was talking a few minutes ago, and these all relate to her. So, you know, the first thing I wrote down was proactive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Second thing I wrote down was creative, empowering, truth, and being genuine, and IDing opportunities to take care of your people and in that spontaneous way. Well, so those are all things that are keys to effective leadership. Each one of those elements I think that good leaders have to possess. And, you know, oftentimes leaders in either the military or in the civilian world get so focused on one aspect of their job that they forget the most important piece, which is the development of their people. So, you know, if you'll indulge me here for a minute, I'll read you a little quote that Arleigh Burke wrote. It was in January 1959, so this is Admiral Arleigh Burke. And he talks about that. He says, "There is one element in the profession of arms that transcends all others in importance. This is the human element. no matter what the weapons of the future may be, no matter how they are to be employed in war or international diplomacy, man will still be the most important factor in naval operations. This is why it's so important that under the greater pressure of our continuing need to develop the finest aircraft, the most modern submarines, the most far-ranging carriers, and whole complex of nuclear weapons, we must keep uppermost in mind that leadership remains our most important task. So it, you know, in the Navy, from day one, you know, from the first day that I walked up that set of steps to the veranda down in Pensacola, Florida, and had drill instructors screaming at me, they were teaching me the elements of leadership. In business, it's important for business leaders to focus on the development of their people, to take them from day one and identify their strengths and weaknesses and mentor them along, instead of just demanding from them that they become leaders, but to help them do that.
And also show them a model of what it looks like, too,
exactly,
correct?
Right. Exactly
so,
right.
So when it comes to that, you know, you talked across several different things, and actually you nailed three or four of the questions I was going to ask, so I appreciate you for being so efficient with that.
Well,
Mike,
you know what? That's how I lead you in, isn't it?
So how do effective leaders behave when you look at that? Because you mix a little bit of attribution in there with behaviors. So I really want to call out the behaviors because, you know, we perhaps can think that we are leading, and the people who are following us are just stopping and watching us walk away.
Sure.
So what is it that leaders should do, in your opinion, having seen it across two genres now, of course, military and business?
Mm-hmm.
So what is it leaders should really be focused on when it comes to behaviors?
Well, you know, I think that you know, some of the things that Holly has displayed here earlier are really important. Something in addition to that, I think, is keeping emotions in check. You know, as you are going through running your organization, and, you know, we all run into stressful scenarios, and you have to be that person that is walking into the group and has control of yourself, so that you don't, you know, it's really... many people don't understand the impact that they have on the people around them. You know, if they're wearing their emotions on their sleeves, it stifles creativity. It stifles the proactive sense that you want out of your people. So keeping emotions in check, you know, compartmentalizing issues, I think, is important. Evaluating information, taking data in, making sure that before you make that decision, you have the best information that you can. But then the next item is to be decisive. You know, you've got your information, take a course, make a decision, and then move on. You got to be action oriented. So, you know, a good leader is not somebody that comes in and is always waiting to be told what to do. You know, they're going to take up the mantle and they're going to move forward. You know, be careful. Something that I learned very early in my leadership career is that you'd never want to put yourself in a position that you have to apologize to your staff for some actions that you've taken because they've been ill-advised or because you haven't fully had the information that you needed to make a decision. And then, you know, along with that goes, you know, being able to sleep at night.
Yeah.
If you're doing the right thing, if you're, you know, if you know what is right and what is wrong, and you're acting within the guidelines of what is right and wrong, be it how you're working with your people, you know, if you have to let somebody go,
mm-hmm.
you know, if that's keeping you up at night, then you probably, you know, didn't have all the information that you needed to have to make that decision. And then the last thing, or two more things I would say, is setting a good example. That always goes, you know, you got to be able to willing to do the things that you expect your people to do.
Absolutely.
And then you also have to be able to have fun. You know, one of the things that that I was always kind of ingrained in me from the very beginning of my Navy career was, you know, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. And if you're not walking into your office in the morning and you're not happy to go and you're not, you know, charged up, then you either need to take a vacation or you need to do something else, because your people are going to expect that from you. They, in order for them to be proactive and for them to do a good job, they've got to see a leader that really values and enjoys what he's doing.
Yeah, so along with that comes a little bit of balance as well, right? I mean,
sure.
You can't always be on the job. You need to take your vacation, because because again, that models for your people that work with you and for you that that you do have balance and you expect them to have balance. Correct.
Correct. And as a matter of fact, that's interesting that you say that, because when I came to my current position, one of the things that we implemented early on was a requirement for people to take vacation. So they couldn't just bank all their vacation and sell it back. You know, we forced them to actually go, you know, decompress, take some time, enjoy their family, and have some fun.
You know, well, Holly, what do you think about that? Because, you know, sometimes that's the most overrated in some cases, and sometimes, most times I find, underrated and unappreciated things, which is taking time off.
You know, it is important. It's really important to be able to kind of decompress and take that step back, because you get a lot more clarity whenever you come back to a lot of maybe the problems that, you know, you were facing and you just couldn't figure it out. And so to be able to take that step back and take a little time off, and, you know, and it doesn't have to be, you know, a 2-week vacation, you know, somewhere, you know, fantastic and warm and wonderful.
Although it doesn't hurt.
It does not hurt, especially on a rainy, cold day like today. However, you know, even if it's just, you know, taking time off to go do something on a weekday that you would normally do on a weekend so that you can have a little more time on the weekend. I mean, you know, there's lots of ways to work that into your life. It's just kind of figuring out what works best for you and being able to take that step back.
So it would be okay if I, for some reason, were to get together with Mike Quinlan and jump in his convertible and have him treat me to, you know, 18 holes of golf. That wouldn't be a bad thing. Perhaps.
That absolutely cannot be a bad thing. You know, maybe you get even a little work done on the side.
I like that.
You,
yeah.
You see how this works for me.
I do see how that works for you.
I appreciate that. And you're just egging him on, too.
And it's fun. It's fun.
I see 18 holes in your future.
Yeah, I know.
That's exactly right. So describe, Mike, if you don't mind, describe the competitive advantage that your leadership provides for Hensler.
Well, that's a good question. So my competitive advantage. Well, you know, I'll tell you what. I've been very fortunate in that I have had an opportunity to see all kinds of different leadership styles. I've had all kinds of opportunity to see various organizations and structures and have kind of been there, done that, right? So as I came on board, there were a series of things that I wanted to make sure that were put in place in order so that they might get a different look at the way they run the organization than they might had they homegrown it.
Understood.
Okay? So coming from the outside, it worked out really well. You know, the very first thing that I did when I came into the business was we had about 45 employees. And so I sat down each one of those employees. I brought them in my office and sat down and had a conversation with them.
Not all at once.
Individually. Okay. Yep. And tried to figure out exactly, you know, what their goals and objectives were, what made them tick, try to identify, you know, who were the kind of the centers of influence in the business, because really what you have there is you're looking to see who the leaders are underneath you.
Right.
And so that was a great exercise. You know, many of those folks had not been put in a position where they could sit down and you know, we're a small business and we all work with our employees, but it's not real often that you get to take somebody that is new to the company, for example, and sit them down and say, okay, so you're sitting in my chair. From the little, you know, the limited experience that you have, what do you see in our business that we could do better? You know, so it was interesting, got some interesting feedback on that whole evolution, but it worked well. And you know, the other thing that we did was, We took a look at setting some very clear goals and objectives for what the business was doing. And then inside that framework, develop measurements that helped us understand how well we were doing in achieving those goals and objectives. And then from there, putting in place different activities that would allow us to better achieve those things. So, you know, kind of one of the things about leadership, I think effective leaders always have to be able to measure their progress. You know, they set goals and objectives and they measure the progress in getting there.
So for those people listening on the radio show today, and also those who have downloaded this as a podcast, Mike has just given us a perfect model and one I've used in the past as well to sit down with everyone in the organization as soon as you get in to get a good feel of what's happening there, take the pulse of the organization, understand the culture better, and also to pop out those leaders and understand who they are and the areas of influence. Some great information, some great tips.
Sure.
And who better to ask than Mike Quinlan? You know, in 2011, this guy was appointed by Governor Nathan Deal to represent Cobb County as director on the Georgia Military Affairs Coordinating Committee Board. Say that three times fast.
I'm telling you, you got it all right.
You know, his responsibilities include interfacing with military and the government leadership to promote synergies between the military and local business. So then you've taken that and what you do. Obviously, Governor Deal has recognized that you can that you've done that well.
Sure.
And so one of the things you said earlier when you were talking a little bit about what you've done over at Hensler is you used the words like it was a homegrown business. Mm-hmm. But my understanding was from Gene and from Teddy and from Bill that it was a homegrown business. They actually started in the basement of Gene's home, right?
They did.
Tell us a little bit about that background.
Well, you know, so Gene was an instructor at Kennesaw State, and he was asked to do you know, somebody came down the halls and said, "Hey, is there somebody here that wants to go do a radio show?" And Gene, you know, is Gene. And so he said, "I'll do it." And he went down and he started answering questions on a live radio show. And that kind of was all the beginning of this business. We, you know, he sat down and all of a sudden got people asking him to help him out with their personal finances. He started doing that. He started doing it in the basement of his house. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and now we're at 75 employees or so in a 26,000 square foot building in Kennesaw. So
very impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive. And so I'm going to pivot back over to you, Holly, and just try to get a good feel for, from a leadership perspective, of course, idea generation is a very important thing. Mm-hmm. So when you think through your organization, where did the great ideas come from? Other than you, where did the great ideas come from?
Because I'm brilliant.
Wait, let me write that
She's
down.
Saying that with a smile. She's saying that with a smile.
I'm only kidding. You know, a lot of the great ideas within our organization comes from the informal conversations and the times when we're sitting down having fun, just bouncing stuff off. And, you know, while we are a very serious group of people, mm-hmm. we don't take ourselves too seriously. And so, you know, when we're just, you know, sitting there talking, there's a problem in front of us and we're trying to work through it. You know, nobody is afraid to throw it out there. And of course, then nobody's afraid to knock it down either.
Right.
And that includes anything that comes from me. Trust me, they have definitely let me know when they don't like what I have to say. But, you know, that's where a lot of our great ideas come from. And when you just feed off of each other and being able to create that culture and in that environment has been really important for us.
Well, that's good stuff. So, Mike, how about in your organization? Where do the great ideas come from? I mean, let's present company excluded. Does it come from everybody?
Well, I was going to say
it comes
from input from Alvin. But
only today.
He's calling me all the time, telling me, you know, how we need to do our business over there. But no, Alvin is a brilliant man, and I'm truly, truly happy to be here.
Funny.
No, so how does it work? Well, you know, we have regular meetings with our management team where we're sitting down and trying to look at the strategy downstream and also look at the environment in which we deal in with our competitors. We also have an organizational or a kind of advisory board that we have with which are leaders of businesses that are dissimilar to ours.
Okay.
And so we'll sit down and talk with them. And then we also have regular meetings with our staff to talk to them about new ideas they might have. And as a matter of fact, in our metrics program that we maintain, it's our performance program, mm-hmm. We have a section called innovation. And in that, we ask our employees to give us input, and we actually measure the number of inputs that we take over the year, and then of those inputs, how many we actually implement. And it's a way for us to kind of keep that as a top-of-mind item for us, and we've had some really good ideas that helped us with process flow and with product development.
So it's a way to keep a reminder out there that idea generation is important.
Absolutely.
And certainly it's important for a leadership organization and for leaders within the organization.
Sure.
Mike, I know earlier when we were talking about you know, what your competitive advantage is, what you bring to Hensler, you mentioned a couple of things that kind of stuck out to me. One was structure.
Mm-hmm.
The second was process, and the third is measurement. So
right.
those three things obviously are really key to whatever you bring to any organization you're a part of, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's difficult to lead in chaos, obviously. You want to make sure that, I think good leaders, they've got an eye on a target downstream.
Okay.
And what they, in order to get to that target downstream, you have to implement things that make sense. And it's hard to demonstrate effective leadership if you're not moving in the right direction. You know, leaders are people that set the course for the organization, mm-hmm. right? They're not necessarily the ones that manage the day-to-day business of the organization. You have managers for that.
And it's a key distinction.
Yeah, and managers and leaders are totally different types of mentalities. You hope that you've got good managers out there and that you can develop them to be good leaders, but they're good implementers. Mm-hmm. You know, they're people that that they can put the nuts and bolts together and get you where you need to go. So good leadership means being able to develop a course. Mm-hmm. Being able to measure your ability to get on that course.
Well, I like that. So, Holly, I'm going to start with you on this answer to this question. So, Mike mentioned it's difficult to lead in chaos, but there's also a balance there, right? Because there's a certain amount of tolerance for ambiguity that a leader must have in order to make order out of chaos. What are your thoughts?
It's true that, from chaos, a lot of times great things come, and it's kind of finding your way through that, and it's being able to have that focus and to look downstream and to see if this, then this,
mm-hmm.
because,
which is the structure piece of it, right?
It is, definitely,
process.
Because, for us, my business is very different than his.
Absolutely.
And, while we've got the measurements, we've got the process, we have all of those things in place, it's just from a financial point of view versus a travel and tourism, because, a lot of our funding actually comes from tax dollars. So we have a different kind of accountability
mm-hmm.
even within that. And for us, the being able to handle opportunities appropriately within the political environment, and I'm not talking about, necessarily the big election that's going on today, but within our own realm of within our community. And, and that's can be a very challenging, opportunity for somebody. And if you can't look down the road and be able to get along with everybody and play in the sandbox and, again, be that consensus builder.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of chaos that goes on within just the community, within that realm that you have to work within. And being able to build upon that and pull all of those very type A personalities usually together is, that's kind of bringing a lot of order out of chaos.
A lot of challenge, yeah. So are you actually saying that in a tourism building a business that there are sometimes competing stakeholders?
Every once in a while, we do run into that, and that does, create a few challenging opportunities. But, it's great. And we have a lot of great partners within our community. And even though they don't always, see eye to eye, that's okay. That's what makes us great.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it all, I guess. So, Mike, I'll come back to you on that. That the balance between leading in chaos versus the tolerance for ambiguity. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know you've seen both sides.
Oh, hey, listen. So that is one of the beautiful things about being a naval officer. Right? So, as a naval officer, we had this little saying that says, plans are great. You got to have them because you got to know what to deviate from. Back during the Cold War. The Soviet Union at the time used to always say, these Americans are really difficult to deal with. And the reason that they're difficult to deal with is because they never follow their own doctrine. So, it's important to be able to, everybody always hears, you've got to be able to adapt and overcome. Well, that's really true.
Right.
You can set that course, but there's going to be bumps, twists, and turns along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's going to be new opportunity, and you have to be able to identify the opportunity and pivot to that opportunity as required. So if you're too rigid, then you're going to miss things.
Okay.
And you'll be ineffective. You have to be able to take information on the fly, make decisions, and adapt.
Yeah, and so you and I see things a lot alike, and certainly Holly and I as well. But one of the things I would imagine that you really focus on is preparation. Am I correct?
Yeah. You know, the motto for our company is Live Ready. And that's not by accident. Live Ready is important because, you know, you're trying to make sure that you are able to not just react all the time, but be prepared for the things in your life that are that you know are going to happen with you. You know, your daughter is going to get married. You know that's going to happen. That's going to be a financial event you're going to have down the road.
Times three.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing, and times two for you, right?
I've got twins. Yeah. They're three. Two little girls.
Yeah. So you can start living ready now.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of unexpected events that are going to happen out there as well. And so you don't want to have to react, be reactive to those events. You want to be able to be in a position to when it happens, you can handle it appropriately. You know, it's just like flying a mission in the Navy. You know, you have, you know what your ingress routes are going to be. You know what your egress routes are. You know what your emergency procedures are. You don't fly a mission without being ready to go on it. And that's how your financial life should be as well.
Well, I like that. And we'll come back to a little bit more to discussion around all the elements that leaders should be taking care of in their lives. And certainly wealth and finances are a big time portion of that.
Sure.
And especially when you have kids, then you have to really enjoy some of the things that Holly Bass and her group of the over at the Cobb Travel and Tourism specialize in. But at this point, you know, Mike and Holly, you both talked a lot about what leaders do. And so I'd like to now kind of focus a little bit on how they do it. So what I'd love to understand from you, Holly, is do you think there's a difference between emotion and passion with regard to leaders?
Yes, okay. I do. And actually, Mike said a little bit about this earlier, you know, with how emotion and wearing it on your sleeve and how that can really be harmful. You know, I definitely think that there is a difference between that type of emotion and being passionate. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very passionate about what I do. It's like I said earlier, I love getting up every day and coming to work, and it's just, you know, it's a great place to be. But it's important not to bring emotion into that passion spot, because you wind up making decisions that are not the best for you or your organization. And I think that also, your employees see that, your team members see that, and it can cause lots of really just kind of negative underlying feelings. And then you also tend to be very reactive instead of proactive and thinking through, you know, what decisions you need to make, like what's best for your organization. You may do something much too quickly, and it's kind of that whole rule of, you know, wait 10 minutes before you send your email, you know, wait 24 hours before you respond, you know, do something to make sure that what you are about to do, especially if it's over email, because that lasts forever, yep. That's truly the direction you want to go. And not to say that leaders should not have emotions, but you need to have your core group that you can express that with, get it out, but not let that get out to your whole team or to all your partners within the community.
All right, Mike?
Well, you know, passion is really important. Your employees and your peer group need to see that you are passionate about what you do. And, you know, passion means that you are going to embrace the actions you're getting ready to take. So, you know, if you can find that employee out there that is willing to do something because they want to do it, mm-hmm. not because you've told them that they need to do it, then you're doing the right thing. Okay, mm-hmm. you're instilling the right beliefs and leadership for those people. Emotion, on the other hand, is look, if you're going to be a leader, and you know, I mean this in the best way possible, right? You got to man up.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody's going to have a bad day. You're going to have a bad day. You're going to wake up in the morning and the kids are going to keep you up all night. You're going to be tired. You're going to be crabby, and you're not going to want to go in and work, right? Well, if you choose to go, right, well, then when you get there, you better put a smile on your face. You better lead by walking around. You better make sure that your people see that you're happy and ready to do the job. Because if you come in there and you're pounding them for no good reason, then you're doing the wrong thing. You have a leadership failure.
And we've all failed at some points in our careers, I would imagine, right? I mean, have we always done it right?
I speak of which I know.
I love it. One of the things you mentioned as you were talking through that last kind of response, Mike, was if you choose to go in.
Right.
So I would submit to the panel, of course, here that leadership is a choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know. And so you mentioned earlier also, Holly, that you know, you need to have a core team, a core group of people to talk with. And I'm assuming you mean kind of mentors or people you can talk offline with to share your emotions with, so they can kind of help you to get it back together and see things in the right light and look through the right prism, so that when you then go in front of your group, things are perhaps different than the way you perhaps maybe even feel inside.
Yeah, I think that's really important to have, you know, two, three, however many you want to have. But those people that you can call and be like, okay, this is my situation. Here's what I'm thinking, or here's what I'm feeling, mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, give me my gut check.
Right.
You know, play my devil's advocate, bounce it off of me. And because, you know, as hard as you try to have all the facts and to be making the right decisions, sometimes just talking it out will bring you clarity that you just cannot reach on your own. And, you know, to be able to have those people that you really trust for you to be completely honest with, and that they can return that, is, I think, is really critical for any leader.
And I would agree. So Mike, what advice would you give someone going into a leadership position for the first time?
For the first time? Well, a great thing to do, and Holly just mentioned it, is to have a trusted group that you can bounce ideas off of. You can, if you're not happy about something, be able to talk to about, so that you can have that clarity. The other thing, the thing I think that a young leader or a new leader has to have is that they have to have a very clear understanding of what it is that they're getting into.
Okay.
Okay. They need to know, okay, how am I empowered to do my job? How can I empower the people that I have working for me to be as effective as possible? Too many new leaders go into a position and they have people that work for them, and they give them responsibility without empowering them to be able to do the job, without trusting their people. And if they really want to be effective long-term and maintain a position of leadership, then they need to trust their people, they need to train their people, they need to empower their people, and their organization will be better for it.
Good point. So now, with your response, you're assuming, of course, that this new leader understands the expectations of him or her.
Correct. And that's kind of what we talked about at the very first part of that answer, is that they have to know what they're getting into.
Yeah.
They have to know what they are empowered to do. And sometimes, you know, you have to pull that out of the people that are putting you in that position, because they may not be...
sometimes they don't know.
That's right. You know, it could be a new position. It could be that the people that have put you in that position are not necessarily as equipped as you are, right? Oftentimes, look at what we have. I mean, both in the military and civilian businesses, right? Mm-hmm. People end up in positions of power that you know, may not need to be there.
Right.
And that's why they.
Right.
That's why they have the Peter principle. Right.
that's exactly right. So, what advice do you provide when someone asks your opinion on how to refine his or her leadership skills? And I'll certainly ask this of both of you.
How to refine their leadership skills. Well, you know, I would say, first of all, that part of leadership is lifelong learning, right? So they constantly have to be enriching their own lives, both professionally and personally. If they're not doing that, then they're gonna stale out. The other thing I would say is that they need to exercise leadership. Leadership is not a passive activity. Leadership is an active activity.
Not a spectator sport.
Exactly right. I mean, you've got a skill set that got you to that position, right? And you have to actively use the skill set. You have to work with your people. You have to demonstrate all of those qualities and skills that got you there. And if you don't, then it's going to get stale, and you're not going to do well with it.
Yeah, I appreciate you for saying that. As a matter of fact, that's exactly how we've designed the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. What we do is we start people out on intact domestic teams of five, six, or seven people, and we don't just teach you teaming in front of the classroom, we actually have you learn by doing. And so instead of going all around the county or all around Metro Atlanta, you just do it with us, and you do it here with us. So the bottom line is that you cannot learn it from a book. You have to actually practice it, and it's best to do it in a safe environment so that when you go back to the job, you can then practice it and get even more benefit from it and learn whether or not it really works for you in the real world or whether or not you need to make adjustments in the real world. So,
right. Well, you know, something else, too, is that's a perfect situation. Holly is a poster child for leadership. You know, she's look at all the different boards and
absolutely
all of the things that she's participating in, all the leadership positions that she's been in and is in. You know, those aren't things that somebody just says, hey, we want you to do this.
Yeah. We don't just want anybody.
That's right. It's because she's gone out there and she's taken the horns and gone and done it.
And she's produced results. So, Holly, what advice do you provide when somebody asks your opinion on how to hone their leadership skills?
You know, honestly, I think it's putting themselves in different situations and getting out of their comfort zone. Because if you stay within this one area that you are just happy all the time, you know, you don't tend to grow. And I think that it's really important to be able to put yourselves in different situations. And, you know, not that you will always do everything right, because, you know, as much as I would love to do that, it doesn't always work out that way. But it's just being willing to put yourself out there and to do it and to participate and take an active role, kind of like what Mike was saying. I mean, if you will be a part of it, whatever it is you choose to do, then, you know, then that will continue to grow you. And, you know, if you know, you're really great in marketing, but you want to, you know, learn and expand, then do something with fundraising or do something in membership or, you know, whatever the organization is. And I'm kind of talking about, like, if you're in a Rotary or some kind of civic club.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, just kind of putting yourself out there. And it lets you meet so many new people and experience so many different things that, you know, you just would never even have the opportunity to do. And therefore, that enriches.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, you're going to put yourself out in positions that are not comfortable for you. And it's not a zero defect state. You're going to screw up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you
mm-hmm.
will.
There is an element of failure.
Yeah, that's right. And you know mm-hmm. what? So you don't do as well as you thought you were going to do. Well, you know what? You learn from it, and the next time you go out there and you participate in that board or you lead that team, you're going to know a better way to do it.
Yeah, I agree totally. So one of the things that you both talked about, or at least, Mike, you talked about, certainly, and I wanted, I'd love to have Holly comment on it, is really around this lifelong learning aspect mm-hmm. for leadership. So, Holly, and how important is it for employees and colleagues and leadership, you know, in an organization to be lifelong learners?
Well, you know, I think that, again, being willing to take in that information and, you know, to really put yourself out there is critical, because otherwise you get stale and the world passes you by. Mm-hmm. You know, I said earlier that it had been 20 years since they had done any research on travel and tourism, you know, before, you know, we really kind of started this new effort. And you want to talk about a stale organization or a stale leaders? It was, you know, they hadn't made adjustments.
Right.
If you aren't a lifelong learner, then you're not making adjustments, and the world is going to pass you by. And, you know, for a leader, that's never where you want to be. You know, you don't ever want to be in the past. You always want to be on the forefront
and
out
relevant.
There and relevant and, you know, and leading the way. And,
yeah.
you know, the skill set is really important. It truly is. But the skill set transfers, you
yes.
know, and that's, yes. you know, if you can take that with you, then, you know, you're going to achieve success.
Yeah, and that's what's so impressive, you know, about people who are able to make the jump in leadership from military to civilian lifestyle, and again, being leaders in both those genres. And it's not an easy thing to do. Certainly, you come with a lot of position power from the Navy, but now, I mean, how much does that really matter when you start a new job someplace else? People don't really comment on that. People don't really
sure.
care about your position, right?
No, well,
you have to come in and make it happen.
Yeah, and even in the military, you know, it's. You know, you can go into a new job. I, you know, when I was my last several years in the military, every 24 months I was someplace else.
Wow.
And you don't walk into, you know, you walk in with a certain amount of credibility.
Mm-hmm.
You're a commander in the Navy. Okay. you know, you've got that check in the block, right?
Absolutely.
But people aren't automatically going to respect you. They're not automatically going to follow you. You have to very quickly develop that level of credibility with people. And you have to do that not just in the military, but in any position that you're in. You know, it's interesting because just kind of circling back to these skills, you know, lifelong learning is an important element. And in the Navy, you know, we've always encouraged our people to continue formal education.
Mm-hmm.
But the second piece is formal leadership training. You know, I mean, is incorporating leadership training into your overall lifelong curriculum as you progress through your career. You know, the third thing is execution, is going out there and really experiencing the things and putting to work the things you're learning. But, you know, the last thing, too, that I think is really important, and you guys probably do a good job with this, is the coaching element.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not all great at this, right? And we're going to always run into situations that we're not fully comfortable handling. And there are some, you know, some great coaching opportunities out there that that leaders can take advantage of.
Yes.
And you know, that maybe you can comment on that, but that's something I think is important.
Well, yeah, and I would also add to that, Mike, that depending on where a leader decides they want to go in their portfolio, if they want to move up in management or move up in their leadership ranks, then it pays to invest time and money in education. Because education changes your paradigm. It gives you a different view from a different level of the stratosphere, perhaps.
Sure.
And make sure that you understand what is being taught on the theoretical side and also how it's being applied practically. And so the Executive MBA program is a great training ground and understanding for how to make it to the next level by being in it and working with it and being very functional and practical, et
right.
cetera.
Well, you know, again, getting back to credibility, it's you can have all the designations after your name that you want to have. But it's not until you demonstrate that second level of credibility.
Yes.
Until you go in there and people and look into your eyes and they understand that you really do know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can only do that on the ground, right?
You can only do that on the ground. Only do that on the ground. So as we think through a couple of the ideas we've talked about before, I've got one other question before I actually step to my final question. So I know we talked a little bit about naval leadership and military leadership versus what happens in the business world. Is there a difference between the development of naval officers and kind of the development of what happens with normal management to leadership and in the business world?
Well, I can, you know, I mean, I wasn't raised as a civilian leader, but I can tell you what the Navy's theory is on
okay.
that, and that is to empower people early.
Okay.
You know, the Navy really has no choice but to empower people early. I was a young lieutenant, and I was in charge of a crew of 12 people, and we would operate remotely from different areas of the world. And, you know, it was on me.
Okay.
I was the mission commander. I had to take those people out, and we did our flying, and we got on station, and we had certain rules of engagement that we had to kind of live by, but I was the guy that had to make those decisions. And you know,
at a young age,
a young lieutenant going out there and doing that was a good thing, and I loved it. And in civilian world, we need to do that with our people. We need to empower them early so that they can, you know, develop and fail when it happens,
right.
So that they can learn for the future and take our jobs. Because mm-hmm. I certainly don't want to be doing this for the rest of my life.
You're on your second career, right?
I've done this
hopefully,
one. I've retired once,
you're
right?
You get this right, right. Eventually, right?
That's right. So I want to make sure I've got some good people behind me so that they can just pay me for the rest of my life.
Very nice. So we've been spending time with Holly Bass, who's the CEO of Cobb Travel and Tourism, and with retired U.S. Naval Commander Michael Quinlan, the principal over at Hensler Financial and doing a little bit of business development as well. So my final question for each of you, and we'll certainly make this answer to my question, available on our web posting. So which book has most impacted your leadership ability? So we'll start with the ladies first.
Very kind. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I've got twins that are three, so if it's not like Sleeping Beauty or Cinderella, I'm not in it right now. So, you know, but there's a lot of good things you can learn from those books about sharing and about telling the truth. And, you know, so it's funny what you, depending on your life situation, what's going on at work that day, sometimes those little books can, you know, they can bring you a lot of perspective. But if we're talking about big people reading, you know, I would probably say, like, Who Moved My Cheese? because that's happened to me. And like my cheese has moved. And, you know, like how do you really kind of regroup and kind of refocus on those kind of things?
So it's being able to handle change, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, I know one thing. I'm going to stop at the store on the way home, and I'm going to get a couple of those Disney books and throw them on my book cabinet.
Hey, man, it works.
I bet. I've had plenty of experiences where I could have used some of those things. For me, there's a book called Bringing Out the Best in Others by Thomas Conlon, and it is all about – it's interesting because it talks about, you know, I'm a firstborn child, right? Firstborn mm-hmm. son. And most of my peer group flying in the Navy were firstborn sons.
Wow.
Or daughters. And so what this does is it takes the psychology of this firstborn psychology and applies it to your people, to your group. So it's really interesting stuff. It works well. It has, you know, development metrics and all that kind of stuff in it. But I would suggest you read it.
It has all the things that would make you interested enough to read all the way through.
And it's a short read.
And so, yeah, that's
right. Which is important, for me.
Right?
That's right.
I understand. So Holly and Mike, on behalf of our learning community, we've learned a lot from both of you today, certainly. And we certainly do appreciate you accepting the invitation to join us today. Although, Mike, we didn't give you much of a choice, we do appreciate the fact that you did come over. So I'd love to have you back on the show sometime in the future. Is that a deal?
That'd work.
You got it. Now, you are taking me to the golf course, right?
Absolutely, okay. Sir. Too bad we can't go today. But with that in mind, can each of you tell us how our learning community can contact you, either by email and or by phone?
All right. Holly Bass, and it's hbass@travelcobb.org. And my work phone number is 678-303-2641, and I would be more than happy to talk with anybody. It'd be great.
Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, probably the best way to contact me is via email, and it's mquinlan, M-Q-U-I-N-L-A-N, @hensler.com, and I'm sure that'll be on the website there somewhere.
Absolutely. So with that response, we'll bring this edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. And we invite you to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. Also, please drop me a line at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests in the future. I've enjoyed hearing your thoughts and also exchanging emails with you, and also LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter as well. So join us again at the same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.